Welcome to the Jack Straw Writers Program, a series of live readings and conversations with Pacific Northwest writers, recorded during the spring of 2005 at Jack Straw Productions in Seattle. This year's series was curated and hosted by John Mifsud. In this program, we will hear from novelist Barty Kirchner and poet James Curl. Here's your host, John Mifsud.
Our first writer is Barty Kirchner. Barty has published 4 critically acclaimed novels. Barty's writing has received great acclaim and has been translated into German, Dutch, Spanish, and Thai. Ms. Kirchner is also the author of 4 popular cookbooks. Today, she'll be reading from her up-and-coming novel, Best of Friends. Please help me welcome our first reader, Barty Kirchner.
My thanks to Jack Straw, and thank you all for coming. I'm going to read from the chapter 1 of my novel in progress, Best of Friends. This is a novel about friendship, how we never really get to know people very well. The way the story starts is that a domestic violence counselor disappears. Now, the reason I came to write this book is because several years ago, about 7 years ago, I was asked by a small newspaper to do an article on domestic violence. And before that, I didn't really know that domestic violence existed as much in our communities. As I started to interview some of the women, I found out amazing things. And at that time, I thought, someday I'll write a book. So many years later, the idea came back to me, haunted me, and a story also came to me. So this is what I'm going to start reading from, chapter 1. The jangling of the telephone startles me. Not fair, this intrusion. The sheet tucked around me like a strapless gown, I extend an arm toward the handset. Long hair drowns my vision. This is what a plant must feel like when it's uprooted. If Karina is on the line, I'll whisper. I made a cool Deutsch last night. I'm still in bed. I know, but this one is... Look, I'll call you back later, okay? Mitra speaking, I murmur into the mouthpiece. Miss Basu, this is Nobuo Yoshihama from the Seattle Police Department. The man with the humorless voice is approaching middle age. The absence of an accent indicates he's a Nisei. Why would the police be calling me? The life I lead, green and shiny, on Seattle's north side, moves to a gentle rhythm. My plants won't have it any other way. Plants are my refuge, my salvation, and happily, my vocation. Usually, I rise at dawn, slip into my greenhouse, and swell with new hope as I appraise the overnight progress of the seedlings. This morning is different. Snuggling against a warm man, savoring the musky sweetness of his skin, I lie curled in the sheets later than usual. What is it? I ask. We need to ask you some questions. It must be a car prowl, a petty crime that has become depressingly common all over the city. Only a week ago, 2 tires disappeared from a neighbor's SUV. Fortunately, my Honda stays in the garage overnight. I keep listening. Do you know Karina Sinha? Yes, I do know her. Why? Is she a friend or business associate? A friend. That doesn't describe her, not completely. Although we're not related, Karina is my only family in this area, not to mention the closest confidant I have had since leaving home. A word from my youth, Shoei, lifeline of a friend, springs to mind. When did you last talk to her? 7 or 8 days back? No contact since? None. Why? Did something happen to her? She's been reported missing by her husband. I'm the detective assigned to the case. She's missing? I'm afraid so. That's impossible. Karina's such a people person, so well-liked in our community, for her helping hand can't vanish like that. From the evening I met her at a party, the light shining off her brilliance, and all through the days and nights and springs and summers of our friendship, I've known she was special. Despite such hopeful rumination, a woody uneasiness constricts my throat. I can't speak. I'd like to stop by, say, in half an hour, if that's okay with you. You live at 4277 Corliss Avenue North. The cross street is 42nd. Correct. He even knows where I live. Though chilled, I reply, all right, half an hour. My hand rigid on the phone, I hang up. All this is like a dreadful preview of some hyperkinetic action flick. I'm badly in need of some explanation to keep my imagination from roaring out of control. The thrilling man beneath the blanket is regarding me, bringing with his green gauge the night we shared. I smile and bid him a guten Morgen. Ulrich. I like the full feel of that Germanic name in my mouth, the melodious lilt. I approve of the body, its wavy hardness under the sheets. If my mother peeked in at this instant, she'd put a corner of her sari over her mouth to strangle a scream. Sin, she would say. My 30-year-old unmarried girl has committed a sin. Fortunately, she's 10,000 miles away in India. Ulrich stretches an arm toward me as if about to say or do something intimate, then closes his eyes and lets his arm drop. The Labrador barks next door. Never before have I invited a man home on the first encounter, and I am unnerved by my daring. If my friends saw me now, they would say in disbelief, a shy thing like you. The silky Irish-strewn linen sheets are hunched up. He sleeps more messily than I do, but for some reason I like the rumpled look. Last night's coupling, the tumbles, thrusts, and tastes has put me into deep contact with my body and also taken me out of my realm. My lips are dry from too much kissing. Then, remembering the detective, I hoist myself out of the safety and indulgence of my bed. At the first touch of the cool hardwood floor, my toes curl. I stoop to retrieve a pair of soft-soled old slippers from under the nightstand. That reminds me of Karina and the evening when she pulled her gift out of its nest of crinkly white tissue paper and sniffed the oil. She'd bought the slippers from the shop of one of our clients. Karina is a domestic violence counselor, a DV advocate, according to her calling card. While I function in a universe of color, bounty, growth, and optimism, she deals with family disturbances, sees purple bruises, shattered hearts, and tears in the eyes of those who seek refuge in a public shelter. Now, staring at the eucalyptus stems on the nightstand, how Karina had admired a similar fragrant arrangement that evening, how she adored all objects of beauty, I find myself wishing I had pressed her to take the risk of her profession more seriously. A sliver of sun is visible through a crack on the semi-sheer window draperies. I can tell from the sun's position that the morning has passed its infancy. The galaxy has inched on to a new position, and I've already missed a thing or two. I look for my clothes. The long-sleeved print dress I wore last evening, a tantrum of wildflowers, lies on the floor, commingling with my bra and panties and Ulrich's charcoal jeans. Crossing the room, I rummage around the closet, grab a plush gray bathrobe and wrap it around me, cinching the belt ferociously, poised for action. Karina and I had bought identical robes at a Nordstrom sale. Despite different sizes, hers a Mrs. Medium and mine a Petite Small, we're like twins, at least sisters. She must have gone somewhere for a breather. She must have felt weighted down by the constant battle she fought on her client's behalf. Anything wrong? Ulrich inquires, turning his blonde head, nuzzling the pillow. I glance at him, then at the window. A friend has been reported missing. I make the statement bland-sounding and hope he won't probe further. I am of the opinion that intimacy has its limits. In the cold clarity of the morning, it discomfits me that I have already shared so much with him. Last evening, which seemed to extend to eternity, I spilled out heart and memory and lowered boundaries thrown up long ago to protect a private self. Thank you very much.
Barty Kirchner, reading as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program. Our program continues with James Curl. Once again, John Mifsud.
Our next writer is James Curl. He is a native Washingtonian and a recent graduate of Eastern Washington University's Masters of Fine Arts program. James is currently an instructor for Western Washington University's Teacher Preparation Program and also teaches English for the Seattle Community College District. His recent publications include Midwest Quarterly, Lit Rag, Crab Creek Review, and The Sycamore Review. His poems are, to me, a soothing balm for a romantic heart, both lyrical and poignant, and distinctly Northwestern. It's a distinct pleasure to present this fine poet to you this evening, so please help me welcome James Curl.
Thank you all for coming tonight and supporting me. Poetry is such a solitary craft, and to see so many people come here to see writing, it's pretty phenomenal, so thank you. We came by it honestly. In bent crosses, the gulls flew. Our black stones and bleached sticks arched toward them without animus. The seagulls so effortlessly rode the wind hiss off the waves, we laughed. We'd cry later into our dirty palms, and again years later when our illusions washed out. But that day, we waited for the loud thump off soft gray feathers and forgot the bruises from our fathers and the looks the teachers gave us for being young and unafraid. Stevie wasn't so brash and walked behind, hummed a Bob Dylan tune, and watched boats tip and tip on the waves way past the jetty. We stumbled upon a seagull that was hit and lay on its side wheezing. The beak was open as if it still had regrets. Stevie had more bruises than us all and smothered the gull with his shoe, then nodded to the horizon where the clouds started to gather. All-night diner. Cigarette smoke. Dust motes filter the gray air falling from a forgotten program on the television, the back and again of a triangle I can't quite figure. I do understand the ticking of the clock as the heart of a lover I've yet to meet, the flutter of wings past my window, a phone call I missed driving over the river, click, clap of tires falling into familiar grooves, coming out. The wind off the Columbia is a song she won't sing, and the starlings who eat her tomatoes are words that scatter when she's close to epiphany. The streetlights slice night, and I'll wait for the next program, a commercial extolling the virtues of discretion, or a knife that could cut our windows straight through. Someone has started a car down at the Thriftway, ripping through dew and silence with equal eloquence. I suppose she'll be home soon, a broken loon stranded in this gravel bar town, weighed down with witness, $2 drink nights at Eddie's, and the sound of scraping black off toast. Now, old Brady Bunch episodes. Carol and Mike stand at the top of the stairs, smiling. The wet look in their eyes can be attributed to the camera lights. Or it may be the guttural moan of knowing how something will end before it begins. Let's try this hat again. This, the week of the rains. Full fists of clouds clutter the sky, dip into the sound, and this fog is the fog we dream about on luculent days. Today we see the drunk shadow of a ferry as it passes and wonder how kingfishers get their bearings swimming through this soup. We see the many-mouthed teeth of the sound over our books and brandy glasses. This is how it develops this season. You walk to the railing, and the prints of your feet are drawings we used to make in school, and they fade. The heels first, the balls of your feet. You've not wandered far from your luggage even now, the things you've collected here or from the backside of receipts. You've wished for more clarity. A foghorn nudges the silence, and I walk out to hold you on the deck until the gray passes or until this roots you here, among the pines and clacking willows, an island rising in a sea of many. Toward a greater quietude. Spring scuttled the tulips in ordinary ways. Hollyhocks, coaxed into photosynthesis, cast dark shadows, their breath a ticket into an unceremonious season. The Chrysler, like her, has stopped trying. The webbed windshield and folded door stand for something greater than the sum of broken downness. She said, "We've lived as clowns in a stationary circus, haven't we?" Her chest falls in and out with the clouds, problematic with air and other terrestrial concerns. In these last years, we've counted losses and seasons less, our fingers tilting toward moments of a greater quietude. I imagine we're wheels we don't know the circumference of. Her voice rattles me. Now night and bathed in blackness. No, no. And the room becomes dense with prayers of forgetfulness. Her lips slip sideways. No, no. Broken down with days. And I put eyes to them. Wait until sunrise. Cold fingers of light stretching through the window. Hands of something less temporal. The passing days. Barefoot, in crackling brown fingers of grass, the boys find a rhythm to their throwing. One feels his years already, and the other gravity in obvious ways. The ball finds the air most clear, whistles under the milky noon sun. And many hours and months have gone in this way, but now only this. They, full of snot, sass, and the satisfied smack of the ball to their stretching palms. Tomorrow will be something else, runaway trains, or a fort that can withstand a full frontal assault from the Manning boys. Today, though, a small breeze from the west, their breath, and a line in the sky between them, a line they find true.
Jame Curl with curator John Mifsud.
I think that relationships are the key to any art form, whether it's relationship to craft or relationship to a piece of art. I think that's important, and whether or not it's between people or between inanimate objects, I think that relationships are the center of my work and trying to understand it. I think that one thing that I try to bring into my writing is that by understanding the intimate, you can understand the whole. I think that if we're perceptive and take in the world, whether it's the way that the sound sounds on days like today when it's windy out, or the way that the trees talk to each other, or whatever it is, if you're perceptive about the world and can try to harness that into some sort of creative energy, that the poetry is something that it's a beautiful art form, and we use and abuse language every day just in our normal conversations, and poetry is a way to make it clean, you know, wash it new, you know, exert some kind of pressure on the language so that it's new again. And that's a big thing.
Let's return to the studio with Jame Curl.
The slow drift. Rolling over after love, I take back my fingers, which were yours, and my shallow, desperate breath. And you take back your tongue, the swollen shadows of my skin, and roll to your side, the curve of your back a half moon under the slatted light slipping through the open window. A train rattles down the tracks three streets away, and we follow rails of our own now, hearts beating in our ears. The cold ties of sheet gather us, slowly as clouds, and we begin again the measure of days. You distracted by darkness, and I with the furling curtains, knowing that with morning comes a solitary light. It's the last one, thank you. They'll put up condos, probably. Streetlight, a sound the sky folds into city and stone, lay across subsequent streets, unwavering with spring coming. The McDonald's on the corner in pieces, and I'm celebrating again the turning of earth, a commerce of angles and traffic's congested wheeze. It's gonna freeze again, this close to April. The light from the nearby apartment is a woman splitting shades. Behind her, two small candles flicker in memory of her breath, and if she were somewhere else, she'd have no destruction in her eyes. Not even a smile from the blade of a pickaxe. She rustles around, picking papers, her old journal. What was the sound of the bus sliding by? Where were the birds calling when she needed a piece of concrete? She doesn't need answers or an interpretation of the way a willow molts. But when the bulldozer blade hit the concrete yesterday, the pull of a woman, a sigh of open soil, and two or three pebbles I kicked down the sidewalk, I started singing again. Thank you.
Jane Curl, reading as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program. These readings and interviews were recorded at Jack Straw Productions during the spring of 2005 as part of the Jack Straw Writers Program and co-produced for radio with 94.9 KUOW Seattle. The curator of this year's program was John Mifsud. Audio engineer and producer for radio was Scott Bartlett. The program's manager was Steve Peters. The executive director of Jack Straw Productions is Joan Rabinowitz. The Jack Straw Writers Program is made possible with support from the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation for the Arts, the Brenham and Jake Foundation, Arts Fund, the Mayor's Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs, the For Culture King County Lodging Tax Fund, the Washington State Arts Commission, the National Endowment for the Arts, Humanities Washington, and individual contributors. Support for radio production provided by Clark Neuber, Certified Public Accountants and Consultants. Original music provided by Jack Straw Artist-in-Residence, Ela Lamlin. All of the writers heard in this series are published in Volume 9 of the Jack Straw Writers Anthology and featured online in the Jack Straw Writers Forum at jackstraw.org. To purchase a copy of the anthology or for more information about Jack Straw Productions or the Jack Straw Writers Program, please contact us by phone at 206-634-0919. Or visit us at www.jackstraw.org. Thanks for listening.